Pianist Orly Shaham has performed with major orchestras across the country and beyond at festivals such as Spoleto and Tanglewood and at venues including Carnegie Hall and the Kennedy Center. She also hosted the radio program America's Music Festivals, which was carried on over 100 stations. This year saw the release of her latest recording, American Grace, and this weekend she's at Powell Hall with the St. Louis Symphony for an all-Beethoven program. Orly Shaham, welcome to Cityscape. Nice to talk to you again.
So nice to be here and to be on this end. Usually I'm listening in my car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, we'll switch things around a little here. Could we begin talking about these recordings that are new this year? American Grace is the piano music of John Adams and Stephen Mackey.
It's an absolute labor of love, this project. It came out last spring, and it was includes the piano concerto that I actually premiered in St. Louis that was written for me by Steve Mackey, called Stumble to Grace, and includes a short work of his called Sneaky March, which I commissioned from him for my concert series for 3 to 6 year olds. and then it includes some incredible piano music by John Adams, the China Gates, which is a small but gorgeous little piece for solo piano, and Hallelujah Junction, which is for two pianos, and I was lucky enough to get the incredible John Kimura Parker to record with me, and that one is really one of my favorite works of the past 50 years.
Uh-huh. On Mackey's Stumble to Grace, on the recording, doesn't your husband David Robertson conduct the L.A. Philharmonic on that?
Absolutely. He's conducting. We did them in some live concerts. The concerto was a joint commission between St. Louis and Los Angeles and New Jersey. So we ended up recording the Los Angeles dates.
And speaking of David and of John Adams, maybe we should note that John Adams' opera, The Death of Klinghoffer, which, of course, we saw here a couple of years ago in St. Louis, David conducted that at the Metropolitan Opera. And I don't know, what do you make about all the controversy? What's your take on all the controversy around that?
You know, I try very hard to stay away from controversy whenever possible, but in this particular case, I have to say I'm not sure I really get it. I saw the production when it premiered at the Met a few weeks ago, and although I found it emotionally very powerful, and it's an incredible story and dramatically so well told through the music of John Adams, I don't see any controversy.
Mm-hmm. What about Brahms inspired then? Let's move to that. Music by Brahms, but a lot of new work as well.
This is really a culmination of a few years of work. This is a 2-CD project, which will be released sometime this spring, this coming spring in 2015. And it includes three of Brahms's late opuses for piano, so those late, gorgeous, stunning little gems of piano works that are so loaded with meaning and emotion, as well as music that inspired him in his composition, things that we know he would have been involved in, music of Chopin, Schumann, Schubert, and Bach, but also works that have clearly been inspired by the kind of language he was using when he was writing late in his life. So there's a few works by Schoenberg, and then there's some commissioned pieces from living composers, and I have to say it's the easiest thing in the world to go up to composers and say, please, would you write something for me and be inspired by Brahms?
Yeah.
Everybody said yes.
Well, would you mention some of the new work and maybe a few of the composers that impressed you in particular?
Sure. We have one little intermezzo by a New York-based composer, Bruce Adolph, who is incredibly adept at mimicking other people's style. Those of you who listen to Piano Puzzlers on NPR will recognize him. He's on performance today. He does these little piano puzzlers where he imitates other composers. In this case, he didn't do it as an imitation, but he was able to take all of the elements of Brahms's compositional style from a technical point of view and turn them into a brand new, beautiful intermezzo. There are also some works by Brett Dean, the violist who's been with the St. Louis Symphony not too long ago, actually. He, of his own volition, wanted to be inspired by Brahms and wrote three little pieces that could be inserted in between the works of Opus 119. When I found this out, I said, could I record them? Because I'm doing exactly this project right now. So that'll be on there. And I also commissioned the Israeli-American composer Avner Dorman, who had written a sonata for me and my brother Gil a couple of years ago that was such a wonderful piece, so intelligently worked out and with such passion that I and he's a pianist of the group. He's a real pianist. And I thought, I want to see how a composer who has that feel for the instrument the way Brahms did would compose. So a collection of really incredible stuff.
You mentioned your brother, the violinist Gil Shaham. Was that Hebrew Melodies, the recording you're talking about?
That's right, yes. Avner Dorman's sonata Nigunim is on that one. And that I mean, that piece just blew me away. I think he's an exceptional talent, and he's got a voice now that is coming through so clearly.
We're talking with Orly Shaham. She is performing Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon with the St. Louis Symphony at Pell Hall for an all-Beethoven performance. It sounds like you record a lot.
I've been doing more in the last few years than I had for a long time, and I owe a lot of that to Gil and his wonderful label, Canary Classics, which he founded and has been recording on for the past, probably close to 10 years. And it's been successful enough that he's been able to open it up to me to do projects that I'm interested in and not necessarily ones that we do together. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of your brother, Gil, I'm curious about your family. You know, as is true, I think, with a lot of talented musicians, you started young. I think your first music scholarship was at the age of 5 in Jerusalem. By 7, you were studying in New York. So I'm just guessing maybe your brother's story is similar. Were your parents musicians by any chance?
Well, my parents were very musical, and they both played instruments, but they're actually both scientists.
Really?
We have an even older brother, Shai, who wanted to play the piano, started to play the piano at around age 5, and then the family legend is that Gil kept asking to play the violin, but my poor mother, who had heard my father scratch on the violin a great deal, kept saying, no, I don't want that scratching around my house. And when Gil was 8, she finally gave in, and there wasn't ever any scratching. And I was the third child, so by the time they got to me and I said I wanted piano lessons, nobody had the patience to say no. They just let me have them.
Well, they had to be really dedicated and believed in you. I mean, if you went to New York to study at 7, one of them went with you, so, I mean, they were serious about it, too.
Well, we came to New York actually because my father was doing a sabbatical year. He was a physics professor, and he was doing a sabbatical year at Columbia University. And that sabbatical year so far has been about, I guess we've been living in New York now for 32 years. So it was one of those, we planned on coming for a year, and the whole family just came and stayed.
Huh. Well, you continue to work with young people. Why don't you talk about your work with preschoolers? You have a series that you call Baby Got Bach.
Baby Got Bach. And we've been in St. Louis a few times, actually, over at Centene.
Right.
With great audiences. You know, I feel that music is another language, and there is no better age to start picking up the rhythms and intonations of another language than this sort of 3 to 6-year-old age. It's well documented. And I also feel like that time of life is when we develop things that will become lifelong loves. So I feel very strongly that this is the age that we need to make sure kids are being introduced to music, and not necessarily because they'll become musicians or because they'll immediately start studying an instrument afterwards, but because we will give them a foundation for a lifelong passion that they can return to time and time again as their life goes on.
When you work with young people, and if a child maybe has some great talent, do you always see that right away? Do you see that spark?
Not right away, but you see it fairly early. It's interesting that you ask. You know, when I was a kid, people used to say that about me, and I never understood what they meant, and I couldn't pinpoint it. Now that I have my own kids, and I see them and their class, and, you know, they both play instruments, and so they're in a class full of other musicians, and I see those kids, I can see what the difference is between kids who have that spark and kids who might not. But I sort of feel deep down that we all have that connection to the arts and to expressing ourselves in very sensitive ways, and it's all about bringing it out in everybody.
Well, you have two stepsons and two sons who happen to be twins. Any musical future in any of them, do you think?
It's possible. The two little ones are very much musically inclined, and at the moment they adore it. We try very hard not to push too much. But it's clearly part of who they are. The two older ones are also very musical, but already beginning to pursue other things in their lives. So music is an important part of our whole family's way of communicating.
Yeah, it must be. You know, I was never musically talented, but I was a preschooler. So it occurs to me when you're working with kids of that age, you know, I'm just thinking about attention spans and that sort of thing.
I make the pieces very short. So even if we do great masterpieces, I try not to make any piece longer than 3 minutes. But I also find ways of getting their attention to what's about to happen. So I guide them through the listening in a way that makes sense for a three-year-old. And it was sure handy to have my two guinea pig twins in the house when they were that age to be able to test all these things on.
Guinea pigs, huh?
don't tell them.
No, I won't. Well, Saturday evening at 8 and Sunday afternoon at 3, you'll be performing at Powell Hall with the St. Louis Symphony in an all Beethoven program. What would you like to tell us about that?
Oh, well, I'm looking forward, as always, to making music with this incredible group. I'm thrilled to be part of this program, which has soloists from the orchestra on the second half as well. And I look forward to working with June Merkle, with whom I haven't worked before, but I've known him for a long time.
Conductor.
So, yes.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm playing the first Beethoven concerto, which was actually written second, so there's some kind of catch-22 joke when you try to figure out which concerto I'm playing. But it's a great masterpiece. And he wrote it very early on. It's incredible what he was already able to say and how he was able to manipulate our emotions so much at such a young age. And he clearly takes advantage of that. He wrote it for himself to play, so he intended to be the one who would pull and push you as it went along quite directly. And there's a wonderful story that he would sit in front of an audience and perform and get them to, you know, be absolutely teary-eyed with some horribly sentimental thing that he's played. And then he would kind of laugh at them like, ha-ha, look at you, look what I've made you do. So there's a lot of that in the young Beethoven, I think.
And wasn't part of his motivation when he wrote that was sort of to reach out to the masses or for people that maybe weren't really familiar with that type of music?
I think, you know, Beethoven was always thinking about a big audience and to write things that spoke to everybody's humanity. From the very beginning, the language that he tried to use in music was meant to be universally understood. And you certainly hear that in this concerto. One of the things I love about this concerto is that he puts in a great deal of humor, which is something that he learned from Haydn, with whom he had been studying right before he wrote this. And it's great to see Beethoven having that kind of fun with something. He didn't continue to do it in the same way throughout his life. So I really enjoy it in this piece.
Arlie, there's one final thing I want to ask you about. You were a panelist on the Diane Rehm Show back in July. You were on with a faculty member from Juilliard, a music critic from the New Yorker magazine, and with Fred Bronstein, who was formerly the chief executive officer with the St. Louis Symphony. The topic was classical music and the challenges, because there are some that fear or speculate that classical music is becoming obsolete. So I just wondered if you'd comment on that.
You know, I think this music speaks to everyone, and it's our job as musicians to make sure that everyone knows that this is out there, and it's out there for them, and they can get out of it a great deal. And if we do that, then this will never die.
Arlie Shaham will be performing the music of Beethoven. It's an all-Beethoven performance program, Saturday evening at 8, Sunday afternoon at 3 at Powell Hall. If you'd like more information, please check out our website, stlpublicradio.org, and go to the Cityscape page. Arlie Shaham, thanks for joining us. It was nice to talk to you again, and have a great holiday season.
Thank you very much. You too.